This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
You're on Joy 94.9. This is The Escape Hour. Thank you for joining us. We have an interesting guest today.
I think we do. We've got a very...
lots of questions. Because
so,
where are we talking about, Steve?
We're going to Bhutan today.
Where? Bhutan?
Bhutan.
I barely knew her.
Oh, dear.
So Bhutan is a country...
Bhutan is a country...
that many people haven't been to.
No,
so a lot of people have.
And we're going to... because it's quite difficult to get to... from what I gather.
Well, I've just seen a YouTube video of how you get in. Let's introduce our guest.
So our guest today is Barb Green. And Barb Green is, I think Barb has been to Bhutan 15 years.
For 15 times.
Oh, my God, 15 times, which is a lot of... So absolutely passionate about Bhutan. Long history of working in nursing education and supporting international students, and especially Bhutanese students that wanted to do their education in Australia.
Fantastic, Barb. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
Bhutan, tell us all about it. It's not a country top of many people's lists. Why?
One, it is, as Stefan said, it is a little difficult to get into. Not impossible, it's just a little bit harder than other countries. I'm not sure for those who don't know where it is.
Yeah, let's find out where it is.
Let's just start at the very beginning. It's on the eastern edge of the Himalayas. It's a tiny little country packaged in between Tibet to... I'm showing you with my hands. Tibet,
great variety.
Yeah, fabulous. Tibet to the north and India to the south. So India lips around and surrounds most of it. Tiny country, about 800 k's wide, about 200 k's deep. So
right,
tiny.
Cool but flag.
Great flag. Its other name is... Yakdrul, which means the land of the thunder dragon. So that's the thunder dragon on the flag.
Oh.
Only about 800,000 people. So
it's tiny.
Tiny, tiny little
country. It's
like
two Geelongs.
Is that 400,000 people in Geelong?
No, Geelongs.
Four Geelongs, yeah. I think there's about 120,000.
I measure most things in Geelongs.
Oh, right. Okay, that's probably a good way. It's easier to get to Geelong than it is
to Bhutan.
So... the Mountain Kingdom, and it is a kingdom, isn't there? There's an absolute monarchy?
It's now a constitutional monarchy. From 2008, they had the first election.
Wow.
And that was actually imposed on the people by the king. He decided that it was time they became a constitutional monarchy rather than a straight monarchy.
So what's the relationship between the Bhutanese people and the family, the ruling family?
Oh, absolute respect, absolute...
love?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. We always say the kings are referred to as K1, K2, K3, K4. So we currently have K5.
Right.
He's just taken over from his father. He's, I think he's been, you've got me now. He's probably been on the throne for about 4 years, I think.
Okay.
It's not all that long, maybe a little bit longer than that. But very forward-looking.
Intriguing.
And very respected.
Intriguing.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9 and you're listening to The Escape Hour today with Mark and Stefan. We're talking all about Bhutan, and our guest Barb Green has got a really long history of friendship with Bhutan and has been to Bhutan 15 times. So the Mountain Kingdom, Barb, how did you get involved with Bhutan? Because it's not something that most people would do.
Well, it's a country that had interested me for some time. And
so what piqued that interest?
I think it was its isolation and its fact that it not many people had been there.
Mm.
I did spend some of my youth living in Thailand with my father, who was an aid worker, and so I was aware of the area and that sort of thing. So, but it was very serendipitous how I got involved in Bhutan. It was just I was picking up an Indian visa and wasn't ready. Of course, it was an Indian visa. Wasn't ready. So I
it's
sat.
It's part of the experience.
Yes. So I was. I just sat down and read the Indian newspaper while I was waiting, and there was a tiny little ad that just said World Health Organization was going to upgrade nursing qualifications from diplomas to degrees in Bhutan. That was all. And it had the lady's name. And I thought, we can do that. I was working at a university who ran a program similar in Hong Kong and Singapore. So I went back to my office. I emailed her and said, we can do that. We've already got the program running. We've got the packages ready. We can do it.
Fantastic.
And we got the gig. So that was 1999. Wow. Yes. So we
talked earlier about the Bhutanese people and the royal family. What characterises the Bhutanese people? What did you fall in love with when you first set foot in this mountain kingdom?
I think their openness. And the thing that really gets me about Bhutan as well is it's the most beautiful country. Scenery is just stunning. I mean, you're up in the Himalayas, of course. So the scenery is wonderful. Architecture is unique. It's the people. And the people and how they relate to their culture and their traditions.
So what specifically about the culture is so appealing to you, Barbara?
That's such a big question.
Well, because religious life instructs very much how they interact with each other, right?
They're Buddhists. They're very religious. They're very respectful of their elders. They're very respectful of their past. They actually have a college where young students can go and do a 6-year course to maintain all of their traditions. So they teach their carvings, their paintings, their all of the traditional skills and traditions and skills they actually teach, and so that they really they have a lot of initiatives to make sure that this culture and these traditions are continued.
So the Bhutanese people have such a loving relationship to the king and the royal family. Mm. They have such a loving relationship to the religion. How are they with their neighbouring countries? Are they as equally as loving, or is there tension because it's a small kingdom?
There is,
because their neighbours are big.
Their neighbours,
like India, China.
Yeah, so. their neighbours are big. They've got billions on the horizons,
yeah.
As you'll hear in a song later. They have a fairly good relationship with India. One of Bhutan's biggest exports is hydropower, and that hydropower is mostly exported to India.
Right.
India has a very vested interest in access into Bhutan, so they maintain a lot of the roads, especially north-south. So that's India trying to keep China
At bay.
So there was quite recently a bit of a chest belting exercise
between China and India, yes.
Between China and India in Bhutan, actually on Bhutanese soil. Bhutanese just stood back and let them work it out. You know, China. There's a little bit of an issue because with the religion and things with the border with China, but there's no animosity between Bhutan and
China as
well. And the neighbours.
Yeah. So what typifies a day for a Bhutanese person?
Well, normally they would get up and they would have their prayers. They would get up or if they are near a religious chortan or something, they would go and perambulate around the chortan and do their prayers, especially older people. Although I often, when I'm there, get up in the morning and go to the chortan, and it's young people as well. They go around, they perambulate around, always clockwise saying their prayers. And so always starts off with prayers. All homes in Bhutan have a prayer room altar. So quite religious.
So there's a big connection between spirituality and living then. Mm. And sometimes it's described as the happy country. What's that about?
It's gross national happiness rather than...
Oh, right, gross national happiness.
Rather than gross national product. Every bit of legislation, everything that's... every law that's passed passes through the gross national happiness pillars of and domains to make sure that... If something's going to change, or what impacts it going to have on the people's lives, and the main thing is looking at happiness not in, oh, you feel really happy today. It's about, does everybody have access to healthcare, to education, to infrastructure that they need to survive, to get their crops to market, to get... So it's a broader thing than just, oh, let's all be happy.
So it's really taking the people into account and trying to give people best opportunities and everybody the best opportunities. Sounds really good.
What an unusual approach.
It is.
Most governments seem to eschew.
Yes. And also this really plays out in the environment. They're very, very particular about the environment. You can tell when you get off the plane. Now, Mark, I think you mentioned having watched the...
hair-raising
flight into Bhutan. It's not hair-raising. It's absolutely stunning.
We're going to talk about that a bit later and refer people to a YouTube video of how you land in... Bhutan.
But you get off that plane and you breathe and you can feel the clean air. It just, you feel it when you just get off.
Is there much heavy industry in the area? Because it's...
No, they've been very particular
very
about...
Very agricultural.
Yes, well, there's down on the plains, yes, very agricultural. But as I said, it's mainly hydro power, tourism hydro that they earn their... income, but they have in their constitution, they have a thing that says 60% of Bhutan must be under forest at any given time. Only carbon negative country in the world. So, you know, they have all of these really ideals, and most of the population relate to those ideas.
So it's not a particularly poor country either, is it? It doesn't share the grinding poverty that some parts of India... I know that India has certainly worked very hard to lift so many millions of people out of the poverty that it used to experience, and India's done a phenomenal job at raising the health, life expectancy and education standards of millions of people. But my understanding is Bhutan's not... poor as such.
Well,
it's certainly not a rich country.
No, it's not.
No Dubai.
No, it's certainly no Dubai. And no, there is poverty. I mean, there's subsistence farmers. And obviously there's people living in very isolated areas that don't have the infrastructure and don't have the resources that they need. But from my experience, and you know, I have to take it from, I am still a visitor there, there's not the open poverty that you do see in India. I don't think you would find there's people starving. People are very particular about looking after, especially the elderly. And I don't think there's any homeless Bhutanese actually in Bhutan. Yeah.
It seems like the Bhutanese people have been able to step aside from some of the social issues that you find in developed OECD countries with drugs, alcohol, or is that something that's...
I would have said that in the past, but it's now all of those things are starting to come in. They got television in, I don't know, 2000 or something like that. So, you know, they're open to the world. They know everything that's happening. They're starting to have a bit of a drug problem.
Are they really?
Yeah, so, you know, and all those social things, they're coming. And it's just been a bit slower coming because of the isolation. But and I think from now on it'll just... be like other countries.
Well, that's a shame.
It is, but you know, you can't stop progress.
Globalization, I guess.
That's a real shame. So, getting into Bhutan, let's talk about that because
a lot of people are put off because they have a daily tariff for Bhutan. Now, the government's aiming at high-end tourism that's sustainable, that's got the infrastructure to support it. So they've introduced a daily tariff. That daily tariff is in the high season. It's, and people are going to go, oh, my God, when I say this, US dollars, $250 a day tariff. Now, that tariff...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but it comes back to what we were just talking about gross national happiness, and I'll link them together in a second. The $250 a day covers... everything, your accommodation, your transportation, a driver, a guide, your food, entry fees, absolutely everything. It doesn't cover alcohol or even soft drinks and your personal spend, but everything else is covered.
So it's not bad.
It's not too bad because as well as that, there is a government tariff within that. And I can't remember the exact figure. I'm going to say $65 of that. And please, nobody check that because that's probably wrong.
But approximately
a proportion.
Quarter, yeah.
A proportion of that goes towards health and education.
Oh, fine.
So, you know that you're going in, you're supporting that sort of stuff.
You'd freely give that $65 to a country that seems to be so beautifully poised for you taking some of their happiness along with you.
Joy 94.9 is on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But sometimes you can't always be with us when you want to. Here's the solution. Here's the solution. Listen to your favourite Joy 94.9 show anytime with our Joy podcast service. Our team of over 30 volunteers pick out the best bits from around 60 programs that Joy airs each week, made available to you for free download. To find a podcast of your favourite Joy show, search for us in the featured providers section within the iTunes store, or find them on the Joy website, joy.org.au. Joy Podcasts. Any show, any show, anytime. joy.org.au.
Joy 94.9, this is Escape Hour. You're here with Stefan and Mark, and our guest is Barb Green, and we were just listening to some Bhutanese music. What was that track all about, Barb?
It's a reasonably new folk song, and it's a lovely song. It's about, and I think it explains a bit about Bhutanese life too, because a lot of the Bhutanese people now are having to go away from home to work. So this is a song about a man who's away from home for his work, and he finds out that his wife has just had a daughter, has just given birth to their baby.
Worker.
He's a worker who's over in valleys away, so right. he's missed out on the birth and he's just pouring out his emotions about the fact that he wasn't there for the birth of his child.
Right.
Yeah, so it's a lovely song.
It's a lamentation.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a beautiful song. The language sounds unusual to my ears. It doesn't sound Indian. It doesn't sound Chinese. It has its own rhythm and its own cadence. How would you describe the Bhutanese language?
It's called Dzongkha.
Okay.
The language is actually called Dzongkha.
Is it related to
bit Tibetan, bit Nepalese, sort of all of that area. And it's only been a written language in the last 10, 15 years been written. I have a university background and have assessed a lot of applications from people from Bhutan. And they have to do Dzongkha as one of their languages. And always, you can have them. They have physics at 90, chemistry at 100, Dzongkha 50. Apparently, it's really, really difficult. Even so, even locals have trouble with it because of its being a newly written language.
Okay, right. So maybe the rules haven't caught up with the with the culture yet.
No.
Yeah, interesting. Now, we do have a beautiful question in. It's a great question from Matt from Thornbury. The $250 that gets spent, Matt wants to know, are there different standards of accommodation to choose from, or do you get an allocated place?
No, actually, that's a really good question because
we neglected to ask that. You're our newest co-host on Joy 94.9.
Normally what the $250, and that's at the high season. It does go down in the lower seasons, but I always say travel in the high seasons. It's the high season for a reason. The weather's the best, either in spring or autumn, either of those two. It covers about a three and a half star hotel accommodation.
Okay.
You can't go in as an individual traveller. Now, and this is what I think you're asking. One, yes, you will be designated some accommodation. And with your tour provider, you can ask to stay in a particular hotel if you've done your own research. Mm-hmm. But you can't, as an individual, just decide, I am going to go to Bhutan and get on and book your hotels and book your flights. You have to go in with a tour company.
So I can't go and on the website of the airline, book flights and decide to go tomorrow from Bangkok or wherever to Para. I can't do that.
Can't do it. Oh. You can't do it. It's all controlled. And
which goes down to the airlines as well. You were mentioning there are two airlines.
Yes, there's two airlines, Druk Air, which is the government one, and Tashi or Royal Bhutan Airlines. And they're the only two airlines that fly in. And they fly mostly from Bangkok, Singapore, Delhi, Kathmandu, Guwahati in India. So I've just thought I haven't answered the question properly. I don't think about the accommodation. Sorry, I'll get back to that question. You can choose a different level of accommodation. So for your 250, you will get a particular level accommodation, which is very good, very clean, very comfortable.
Safe, good
level accommodation. But if you want something a little better, like you want to stay at the Taj or you want to stay at one of the Aman, there is five Aman lodges across the country. And
which is a high quality.
You'll be paying $1,000 to $1,500 US a night for those.
Right.
Or you can stay in the very nice three and a half star. Very comfortable.
So, you know, for those people that have the resources. Then
well, Brad Pitt stayed at the Aman once. Or you can stay at the Taj for five or six.
How many children did he get for that?
Well, I don't know if he had his children. No, actually, he didn't have his children. He came over for the opening of the opening of the lodges across the very. So there's a lot of a number of high end, but you certainly don't need to go to that level. I would just stick with what's. The
government, it's good enough. It's clean, safe.
Clean, safe, and usually they have a nice Bhutanese flavour about them. And
great segue. Let's talk about the cuisine.
Right.
Matt, I hope we answered your question. We're going on to the grub. What is Bhutanese food like? And let's talk about stoned pigs.
Right. Well, Bhutanese food, it's got to have chilli. If it hasn't got chilli...
Oh, really?
It's not. It's just not right.
As in heat or flavour?
Both.
Oh, okay. Both. So they like a bit of heat.
Their national dish is called amadatsi. Amadatsi is chili cheese. So it is a dish
of cheese.
Chili cheese. It was something that you don't think about in Asia, but they have cheese. I once ran a competition in Melbourne with a Bhutanese student to get the best recipe for amadatsi. I was so disappointed. 90% of those recipes came back, and the cheese they used, Kraft Singles.
Oh.
It was a bit surprising.
A bit nasty on the emadazi. Kraft Singles, and what do? Pop some sriracha on top and call it a day.
Well, the chili is a vegetable, and they use chili a lot. They eat a lot of rice, and I mean a lot of rice. Rice three
just
times
white
a
rice.
Day. Or red rice.
Ah, okay.
Both. Right. White and red.
Good for the fibre count.
Yes. and they have a lot of veg, pork, and Mark's comment about the pork was the pigs are usually fairly happy. They eat the marijuana that grows wild on the side of the road, so they're fed on marijuana, so they're pretty happy pigs. But a lot of pork belly, and is
it
one of the dishes.
It surprises me that they're not so vegetarian, because a lot of Bhutan,
they're very pragmatic. They say, well, somebody else has killed the animal, we may as well eat it.
Okay.
They don't kill.
All right.
They don't kill.
They don't kill?
They don't kill.
But they will have bacon.
They eat. They eat meat if someone else kills it, yes. Some don't.
Who is this brandy person from a foreign country killing all of these stone pigs?
Yes, all those pigs. But
It's more of a sense of pragmatism. It's like, no, this is the protein that we're going to have. It's farmable. It's consumable. Yeah. Do they have a lot of other animal proteins, or is it quite a vegetable, rice-based diet? A lot of soups and sauces, like Indian-style food and Chinese-style food?
Yeah, well, it is sort of Indian. Like, we talk about pork belly, which is one of their standard dishes, and it's like a soup with pork belly, white radish, some greens. They during the winter, they have a lot of dried river weed, a weed that grows in the river, which the ladies go in the summer, in the freezing, melting snow water, and harvest the river weed and dry that, and then they use that as a vegetable. So
is that sort of like a Japanese-style seaweed?
That's what it tastes like.
Yeah.
But like it doesn't have the salty taste.
Right, because it's fresh water instead of seawater. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yep. So that's lovely. They have asparagus. Goes up there a lot.
Are we talking about the long white asparagus?
No, green. The green. Yeah. And mushrooms. A lot of mushrooms, a lot of different type of mushrooms. They also
good for vegetarians.
Great place for vegetarians. They have another cheese dish with mushrooms, as well as the one with chili. Momos. So, they have the best momos in the world.
What's a momo?
Well, there's a momo place just down here off Burke Street in a place called Tivoli Plaza. It's Nepalese momos. Oh. They're large steamed or fried dumplings. So it comes with a little broth, like a clearish broth.
And lots of like
chili sauce.
A chili sambal that you dump in.
Yeah, like Malaysian sambal, all that kind of thing, but not quite as hot. It's a bit more mild. But
the Bhutanese one's pretty hot.
Oh, is it? Okay, the place that I quite often go to just off Burke Street in the city is a Nepalese momos. It's really good comfort food.
And this is changing because of the way the tourism works, that everybody's with a tour operator, you have a guide and you have a driver, and you drive around and everybody stops for lunch. It's often Bay Marie food. So, and historically, when I first started going there, you would have stuff like spaghetti bolognese and chop suey. But now they're going back to actually serving traditional Bhutanese food, which is lovely. So for a vegetable, you might have the fern or the river weed. So people do get a chance to actually try the local cuisine.
Yeah. I'm just looking online for where you can get Bhutanese food in Melbourne. There's not a huge amount. There's a really good restaurant called Gateau and Lamb in Thimphu, Bhutan.
Yes.
I don't think the 86 tram goes there.
Not yet.
So I think Nepalese food would be the closest approximation if you wanted to try something in Melbourne.
Yeah. And there's always a good thing is to make friends with some of these lovely Bhutanese students who are in town, and they're all good cooks.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
Is it a strong cultural connection apart from the Kraft singles cheese with sriracha on top?
It's
like all Bhutanese are cooks.
Well, they do love food and they do love to eat.
Yeah.
You never just go to someone's house and there's always a snack. If you're going for a meeting, an official meeting, you could be, you just arrive, you've just had brekkie, you've just gone into an official meeting and someone will tap on the door and a little tray of food will be brought to you and with a cup of tea. They do have milky tea, which is lovely, which is an Indian, pulled tea. They do have butter tea. Now, I love everything Bhutanese, but I cannot drink butter tea.
Sounds very Harry Potter.
Well, it's very oily, greasy. It's more like a soup.
And okay.
And it's sometimes served with an egg or something.
Oh, sounds quite...
It's not nice.
Well, let's go back to the momos, which are very appealing.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLB, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
prayer wheel. Narrow and salty butter tape. They build a fire to greet us. They measure wealth with happiness. Chili cheese and mountain breeze. Cool stream between the trees. There's billions on the horizon. They measure wealth with happiness. Look within the here and now. A new
you're listening to Joy 949 and you're listening to The Escape Hours with Steph, Mark and Stefan. And our guest today is Barb Green and we're talking about Bhutan. And Barb, that was a special song we just played. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
That was a song written by Rosie Ballon and, well, she wrote it as a poem and then it was put to music and sung. And Rosie was one of my students who came to Bhutan with me on a study tour. I was running study tours for Deakin University for the last 7 years. I've recently retired from that, but I took 14. Well, the Bhutanese government gave us permission to take 12 students, and then we got the first lot of applications, and we couldn't decide. And we asked, could we take a few more? And they said yes. And we've never gone back to only taking 12. There's always 14. So 14 Australian students go every year to Bhutan. And this was something that Rosie wrote after her study tour in Bhutan.
Fascinating that she picked up on a lot of things that you've discussed, the tea and the oiliness, and wealth is measured in happiness. And it's a very unique take on a lived experience, isn't it, that Bhutanese people have?
Yeah, well, that song almost brings me to tears every time I hear it because I thought, she got it. You know, this is your takes young students to a foreign country to so that they can experience and learn.
And it's no Kentucky tour.
It's no Kentucky tour. It's pretty hard grind. It's a hard and very confronting for a lot of students.
What do you find the most confronting? What do you think the students are most confronting?
Well, especially in the hospital, you know, with the lack of resources, things like that. You know,
this is when
no
we realise how spoilt we are.
Well, and that's one of the things the students always say to me. We're so wasteful. We use all this stuff in once and we throw it away. They wash everything and you know, sterilise it and reuse it. And I said, well, yeah, they do. But it was just to me, when I first heard that song, as I said, it just about brought me to tears. I thought, this is what it's about. This is what we do. This is why we take the students. And she got it. She just got it. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So we were talking before about Bhutanese food, and if you want to have a half-hour holiday in Melbourne, where to go about it? We've had a bit of a Google search. Sorry, I know we're not supposed to use brands. Oh. Internet search. there's probably a better chance at finding Nepalese food or Tibetan food in Melbourne. So if you're going to do a search online, that'll probably be the closest approximation to Bhutanese food. There's a large Bhutanese community in Albury Wodonga. Did you know that?
Yes.
How did that come about?
Well, that's a little bit of a difficult one for me to answer. I don't know the whole story about that. They're referred to as Bhutanese refugees, but
right,
and so there is a political backstory to that, which I'm
Probably outside of the scope of this show.
Well, and also I have not really got to the bottom of.
Right.
I did speak to a number of people. I've spoken to a number of people about it, and I keep getting different answers. So I'm still...
So you're unclear.
My jury's out on it,
right.
on what they are. But they're mostly of Nepalese heritage,
right.
They're a background ethnicity. But yes, they are. There's a group of Bhutanese there. We do have him in Melbourne. We have a number of Bhutanese now as permanent residents.
Really?
Yes. That's very new.
Where's the Bhutanese community congregate? Are they all over the place or is there a particular part of town?
Coburg's... quite a few in Coburg.
Is that because of the universities?
I was just about to say that. Footscray, you'll find them centred around the universies because most of them come
study and stay.
They come to study. Mm. I know of four families now that have actually stayed. Now, before they all would go back to Bhutan, but they're staying now. They see the opportunities for their children and to actually get a good education here. And
oh, fantastic.
And we actually have a number of people who are experts in their field, like we have the current forensic medicine person from Bhutan here doing a fellowship with the Institute of Forensic Medicine because he actually doesn't have a lot of equipment except in Bhutan. So he's come out here to look at how to do it and then take that back to Bhutan to try and build up that practice.
Yeah, right.
Mm. And Bhutan was recently in the news in Melbourne as well with the Siamese twins.
The co-joined twins. They are still here and they're really in Australia because a Bhutanese doctor did a fellowship here for some time.
So talk about that. That's fascinating, that link.
Yeah, well, I think that's... And that happens with universities also. I think... it's not just Bhutan, it's Asia. I think if people come out here and study in a country or come out here and do a fellowship or learn something, they tend to go back and they tend to remain very loyal to that institution or the people that they worked with in that institution.
Yeah, and I think it's a great relationship that we can develop with people and then allow them to come back or to have some technique that they couldn't do home.
Yeah. The Australian Bhutan Friendship Association, which I chair, I'm the convener for the Melbourne chapter. It was actually set up in 2001 by Tim Fisher, past Deputy Prime Minister. He has a great interest in Bhutan. He was the patron of that organisation. And that was to set up people-to-people relationships.
Mm.
And that's what we do now. And our main role now is to provide support to the Bhutanese students who are in Melbourne.
What typifies a Bhutanese student? Are they usually in sort of government service areas like healthcare and...
Historically, it was always scholarship students and Endeavour, AusAid, Colombo Plan, or World Health. A lot of health, engineering, environmental, agriculture. They seem to be the big areas where people come and study. But now there's getting to be private students coming as well.
So then they're studying whatever is their particular interest.
Yeah, whatever their interest is, business, a lot of MBAs.
Right.
Historically it was master's, PhDs. Now we even
bachelor's.
Have undergraduates. Yeah,
yeah right. Yeah.
So it's changing as people get more and more wealthy and can afford to send their children out.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, okay.
So I'd just like to go back to getting there in terms of, you know, I'm really interested in going, but I can't get there myself, okay?
Why?
Is it, well, because I have to... book a tour.
Oh, I can't, I see what you mean.
You know, be an individual tourist.
They didn't like the French or something.
Oh, well, I don't know about that. Well, maybe.
They love the
although
French.
I do have an Australian passport and stress.
Kill off.
But is there anything else that people... It's really high altitude as well. Is there anything else people need to be aware of when if they want to travel to Bhutan?
And I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but I actually run tours to Bhutan.
You've got a lot of insight.
So I know, and I'm very particular about the people who come on my tours. I ask them to please go and see their GP before they travel. They need to know exactly where they're going in Bhutan. And always take the advice of the tour provider about where to go, because you might think, oh, well, I'm going to Bhutan, it's only 800 k's wide, I'll go from point A to point B and it'll only take me 5 minutes.
It doesn't, does it?
No, the roads are not wonderful. They are working on the roads, in widening the roads, but they have a lot of landslides. They're not very wide. The maximum speed limit in Bhutan is 50. I don't think I've ever gone the maximum speed limit, ever.
Have you got lower or higher?
You'd run out of Bhutan pretty quickly, wouldn't you, if you were going at 120?
Well, it's S-Bends. It's very narrow roads.
No, because geographically it's... Mm.
Geographically, yeah. And the roads conditions are not good. And you really don't want to go speeding around mountains where you've got a 2,000-foot drop on one side and a mountain cliff on the other side.
No.
But, yes, you have to be careful, to go back to Stefan's question about altitude. Make sure that you've...
Fit.
And also...
So not a good place for people with respiratory or circulatory health conditions?
Well, it depends what they're going to do. If they're just going to drive across the country, they're probably okay. If they're not going to get to 4,000 metres and climb, you know, or run a race or do something like that, if they're just going to get out and take
Everest
photos...
You can see Everest from there, can't you?
Oh, yes, quite. Yeah. Yes, yeah. Yes. You fly past it on the way.
Yeah.
So, it's... Always consult your GP before you go. And if you do go, make sure you take all your medications with you, because a lot of medications are not available up there.
Right.
So that's always a thing to watch out on.
And what about health insurance as well? Is that something that...
Nobody comes on my tours before I see their health insurance certificate.
Right.
Yeah. I used to actually ask that they were insured with a particular health insurer, because I knew that health insurer had access to helicopters to get you into Bhutan to pick people up. Doesn't matter anymore, because Bhutan now has two helicopters of its own for rescue. So,
right, okay.
Yeah. But yes, you must have health insurance.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
If you're looking for Bhutanese food, we've been able to search online, and there are a couple of really easy recipes which are very manageable that you could do yourself. Now, I've found these on the SBS website. There's one for vegetarians, a Bhutanese red rice goji berry and hazelnut salad, and there's a Bhutanese chili chicken stir fry, which also looks very manageable to do at home. What's your take on Bhutanese cuisine? Is something that you accessible that you can do?
Oh, look, there's lots of things that you can make at home. Have a look at pork belly, Bhutanese pork belly. I think there's a recipe will come up for that. And emadatsi, the chili cheese. Easy to make at home. And if you can't get good yak's cheese, you can use craft slices.
And the big question we ask all our guests, roll or fold?
When you pack... Your bags. You travel extensively.
I know. And I do a mix.
Oh.
I do a mix.
Oh, and, there we go.
I do roll, fold and satchels. So I do the satchels.
Yes.
And I have each particular underwear shirts in a different satchel.
Are you very organised?
And sometimes I roll T-shirts, but I fold trousers.
Oh, controversial.
Sounds very complicated.
I have to have a whole show on that one.
we should compile all the answers then, have a full show, full hour.
Exactly. Thank you very much to Barb for coming in.
Thank you for having
and
me.
Thank you for the Bhutanese community for bringing us chili cheese. You're on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.